The Exchange Daily Podcast is brought to you by
Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. This hour on The Exchange, two very different issues that have both been up for debate at the State House this year. One of these grabbed New Hampshire and national headlines, the Raptor Bill, introduced by a group of fourth graders from Hampton Falls as part of their civics education unit. The kids propose making the red-tailed hawk the state raptor, but instead of just voting on their measure, some House lawmakers seem to mock the students' efforts. That created some hurt feelings, but it also opened up a broader conversation about how we teach kids civics and whether encouraging them to draft bills designating an official state this or that is a useful way to go about it. Today in The Exchange, we'll follow up on that discussion, but we begin with an issue that's received far less attention, voter residency requirements. The Senate last month approved a bill to require people live in New Hampshire 30 days before they can vote. Meanwhile, the House has asked the state Supreme Court for its opinion on a bill to clarify what domicile should mean for voter registration purposes. Let's get your thoughts in now on these voter measures. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. With us now on this voter story is Gary Reno. He is State House reporter for the Union Leader and New Hampshire Sunday News. And Gary, thanks for taking time out. We appreciate
it. You're welcome. Good to be here, Laura.
Well, give us the wider context, Gary, please, that these bills come under, because it seems like we've been talking about voter ID and other voter requirements for a long time now.
Well, we kind of have to go back to the year 2000 and that election, particularly the general election where we were recounting votes in Florida forever, it seemed like, before we decided who was going to be president or who had the electoral college.
That was crazy. I remember that.
It was. And as a result of that, we had the Help America Vote Act. And one of the requirements of the Help America Vote Act was what was referred to as motor voter. When you registered your car, you were registered to vote. And New Hampshire didn't want to go along with that. And one of the options that states could do was to have same-day registration. So New Hampshire went with same-day registration. And it's had its ups and downs and everything, but it has been working pretty well. And then we go out, kind of fast forward a little bit to the 2008 election, where there were this whole new group of voters that turned out for that election. They had never voted before. And after that, we started seeing the rise of the photo ID, where we really want to find out, are these people really who they say they are? Are they moving in here? Are they voting in three or four different places? Whatever. And we see the rise of this coming down the pike. In New Hampshire, it was in about 4 years ago that we first passed a photo ID bill. It was vetoed by then-Governor John Lynch, overridden. And then we had a court case and then another bill, and it was just been going on since that. Now, this year, we have a bill before the Senate, which would do basically two things. It clarifies the definition of domicile, and it has a 30-day residency requirement. And residency requirements can be somewhat problematic. Some of the longer ones have been overturned by the Supreme Court. But there are a number of states with a 30-day or 45-day residency requirement.
A 45-day residency requirement, so even more than the proposed 30 days that they're talking about.
Which, as you can understand, would come into some sort of conflict when you have a same-day registration. So if somebody moves to the state 2 weeks before an election and goes to register for voting at the polling place as a resident of the state, they are not going to be able to do that because you have a 30-day requirement.
Ah, I see. So those two could possibly be viewed as in conflict.
The other thing the bill does is clarify domicile, which has been a key point through all of these issues with the photo ID bills. And this bill basically says that your domicile has to be your primary home or principal home, where you intend to be. Even if you leave for a little while, that's where you intend to be for a number of years, or not years, but your permanent residence. It says in determining this, we can use a different number of things, such as business pursuits, employment, taxes, so on and so forth. And then it has this other little provision which says that if you're here temporarily for some purpose or other, and you don't really intend to be here for your permanent residence, so say if you're a college student, would be one, or a election worker for a certain campaign or whatever, that this is not – you cannot claim New Hampshire as your domicile. And I think that's probably the thing that's most problematic to people. This bill did pass the Senate, and it was on a very – it was a down party lines, essentially.
And the House has asked the state Supreme Court,
the House
right, Gary?
Has asked the Supreme Court to basically look at the same domicile issue before the end of the year, we'll probably find some opinion from the court will come down.
All right. Well, joining us now on the phone, Gary, is Dave Scanlon. He's Deputy Secretary of State. Again, his office is charged with ensuring New Hampshire's elections run well. And Dave Scanlon, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome. Good morning, Laura.
Well, what kind of problem is this 30-day requirement bill aimed at, Dave?
Well, it's aimed at addressing what you might call drive-by voting, where individuals come into New Hampshire for a brief temporary period of time, are able to actually register to vote here and vote in an election, and then leave when they're done. And an example of that might be a construction worker that's coming into a project for a job that might take 3 or 4 months, but they fully intend to go back to their home state, wherever that is, when the job is finished. It might be some type of a consultant that comes in to work on a project. Gary mentioned campaign workers might be a perfect example of that. The law really doesn't address students, although when they are because there is a statute that currently exists that's not being changed that says basically that students have a choice of claiming New Hampshire as their domicile or the state that they came from before they came to New Hampshire. The attempt is to prevent drive-by voting. People get excited about the New Hampshire elections and specifically the presidential primary and, you know, make an attempt to vote here so that they can participate in that excitement.
How big a problem is drive-by voting? I mean, are there actual numbers or data that talks about how big or small a problem this is?
We don't have numbers. We have anecdotal examples of this type of activity occurring. We do know that based on the photo ID law that we have and the verification mailings that go out, that there is a percentage of voters in New Hampshire that fill out domicile affidavits, which is just a sworn statement saying that they are, in fact, a resident here and they're entitled to vote here.
I've got some Facebook comments, Dave, from our listeners on this, and there are a couple different shades of opinion here. I want to share a couple of these with you and see what you and Gary think. Neil says the state prosecutes out-of-state auto registrations with a vengeance, yet turns a blind eye to voter registration and fraud. So he seems to be in favor of tightening up. Also, Rich says it's a 30-day waiting period. Why is that so hard to deal with? But then Jim says, take a real-world possibility. Someone relocates to New Hampshire 29 days before a scheduled vote. They get their new licenses, turn in their old ones to their previous state. They register their cars, enroll their kids in schools. And now the state of New Hampshire is going to tell them they cannot vote on the issues that will be directly affecting them for the foreseeable future. Jim says, where do we get off trying to deny someone their right to vote based on an arbitrary date? Dave Scanlon, what do you think about that 29-day example that Jim mentions?
The law as it's written does say that the legislation as it's written does say that if a person that finds themselves in that situation that they should be entitled to vote in the state where they came from. And New Hampshire has similar language that says that if a voter leaves New Hampshire and moves to a state where the cutoff for voter registration, forget about durational requirements, but voter registration is 30 or more days before the election, that that voter is still entitled to vote in the state of New Hampshire.
Let's take a call, both of you. Tina is joining us from Laconia. Hi, Tina. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you, Laura.
Sure.
My concern with this is that New Hampshire has one of the most stringent domicile requirements in order to vote in the nation. And I know that having lived in a number of different states. My husband and I frequently travel for work, and we may be gone 4 to 6 months at a time. We're not necessarily in the state within 30 days before voting. That would disinclude us. When I was a student, I was a student out of state. That would disinclude me as well. It was a 12-hour drive to get home to New Hampshire.
I don't think they're saying, Tina, that you have to be in the state for 30 days. They're just saying you have to have lived here for at least 30 days before you vote.
Ah, then I've misunderstood the country.
Yeah,
sorry.
I think somebody who travels a lot, right, Gary, would get an absentee ballot.
Absentee ballot.
Oh, yeah, nobody's saying you can't travel or go somewhere. There's people on military deployments and so forth.
Right. In fact, there's specific exceptions for that in the law that people who are away temporarily, they don't give up their domicile because they're away temporarily if they're intending to come back here.
Okay. Dave Scanlon, last thoughts from you. Do you think that these bills will actually get a vote this time around, given how busy the legislature is with the budget, or is it going to have to wait till next year?
I think these bills will come up for a vote. The question that I don't know yet is whether the House will send Senate Bill 179, which talks about the durational requirements, to the Supreme Court for questions related to constitutional issues, as they did with another House Bill 112 that also dealt with defining domicile.
Okay. Dave Scanlon, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
That's Dave Scanlon. He's New Hampshire's Deputy Secretary of State. Gary, a couple of these Facebook comments that I have, and I won't read all of them, but several of them suggest a partisan nature to these bills. Is there a partisan aspect to this?
Well, I don't think you'll find many Democrat sponsors on these bills. I mean, it's largely a partisan issue. It's mostly Republicans who are bringing these bills forward. It's not Democrats. I think another thing that we probably might want to mention here is that the real issue is domicile, and the state defines domicile several different ways. I mean, there's one definition for motor vehicle, there's another for voting, there's another for residency. So that's one of the problems that's sort of surfaced here.
All right.
Over the years.
Sounds like something we'll have to dig into
yes.
At another point. Thank you very much, Gary, for being with us.
You're
really
welcome,
appreciate
Laura.
It.
Take care.
That's Gary Reno, State House reporter for the Union Leader. Coming up, let's hear from you as we dive into the question of how best to teach civics education after the infamous Raptor Bill controversy. The number 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. For the rest of the hour, we're going to look at the question of civics education, a conversation that got started after a group of fourth graders introduced a bill to make the red-tailed hawk the official state raptor. The controversy that erupted afterwards wasn't about the fact that the bill was defeated. It was about some of the comments lawmakers made during debate, including some members calling these bills a complete waste of time, and one even linking the hawk proposal to abortion. It was upsetting to some of the kids and their parents, but it did give late-night comics like John Oliver some material.
What is wrong with you? A, this doesn't matter. B, the children are in the room. And C, this doesn't matter. Just vote yes and make them happy.
Apart from the jokes, though, many around the state have questioned whether introducing bills is an appropriate way to teach kids about civics and government. We dive into that topic now on The Exchange, and you can join us. We'd love your thoughts. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. In a few moments, we'll talk to two civics educators here in the Granite State about how they try to getting kids engaged around this topic. But first, Rick Stevens is with us, Northern New England correspondent for the Associated Press. Rick, thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Laura.
So here we are, Rick, 2 weeks out from this controversy. What's happened since in terms of, you know, follow-up or responses from other House members, from the governor, from the kids, from their teacher? What's sort of gone on since this?
Well, it really has had a lot of momentum since the March 12th debate in which the bill to name the red-tailed hawk as the official state raptor came up and was rather now famously defeated by the legislature. So since then, there's been this, as you point out, this open discussion about how best to teach civic engagement and civics in our schools. Some lawmakers, Rennie Cushing, who sponsored the red-tailed hawk bill for the kids, He went on the floor and publicly apologized to those students and to all students for some of the lawmakers' comments. He said something like, I told the kids that we're not always quite so mean and cranky here in the legislature. The governor traveled to Lincoln Ackerman School in Hampton to personally encourage the kids to get involved and stay involved and not take their defeat, too hard. And it has opened up this discussion. I spoke with a civics educator, a social studies teacher, Dave Alcox, who says he loves the idea of these bills, and they're very popular not only here in New Hampshire but around the country. But he also acknowledges there's other ways to get kids involved and keep them involved. He invites legislators to come and visit the class. He invites the governor, who will come and speak to his class. He took his kids to the a forum in Concord where two retired Supreme Court justices spoke. So there are other ways to do this, according to some of the teachers.
Well, and Dave Alcox will be with us in a minute, along with Andrea Cameron. She's a fourth grade teacher. But a couple more questions for you, Rick. You mentioned the governor. She actually went to the classroom where these kids had introduced the bill. Let's just hear what the governor said to them.
I think a lot of us feel that they didn't exercise their best judgment on the day they voted. And like a lot of human beings, sometimes people make mistakes. And one of the things that the amendment process does is allow people a chance to try to correct mistakes.
And again, as you and others have written, Rick, you know, now others in the legislature are saying, no, we want kids engaged, you know, stay with it. But some lawmakers have said, and this is Democrats and Republicans, they're tired of kids introducing these bills. One even said they're proliferating and enough already. Have they proliferated, Rick? Is it that bad?
They really have. There's evidence to show that there are more and more of these requests every year. And again, it's not just here in New Hampshire. Maybe a little history would be helpful, too.
Sure.
It's not the first time it's been controversial. 1977, they think that's probably the first time a group of students came to the New Hampshire House of Representatives with such a bill. These were kids from Broken Ground Grammar School, and they wanted to name the ladybug as the official state insect. It actually got tied up in quite a bit of legislative wrangling. It went through some strange committees. It went to a, I don't know why a state insect goes to the Committee on Claims, Military, and Veteran Affairs, but it did. The committee determined it was important enough to create a state insect selection board. There were parliamentary maneuvers designed to kill the bill, stall the bill, all of which were ultimately shouted down, and then And now we of course, have the ladybug as our official insect. So these things do eat up some time. And Representative John Burt, who was kind of criticized on the floor for what some perceived as him making fun of the kids, saying, oh, what are you going to do next, name a state hot dog? Well, it's important to remember that Burt annually holds the state hot dog day on the lawn of the state house to raise money for some animal causes. And so he was really kind of poking fun at himself. But same sort of scenario played out in Hawaii last year when they were trying to decide whether the ukulele or the steel guitar should be the official instrument of that state.
So other states have this as well, Rick.
Oh, sure. And you know, we go back to the comment that got this started, of course, was linking the red-tailed hawk to the abortion debate. And it's not the first time that these civics lessons have been used for a social purpose. In South Carolina last year, there was a child, a third grader, who wanted to name the Columbian woolly mammoth as the state's official fossil. The bill got held up when some state lawmakers wanted to note in the language of the bill that God had created the fossil on the sixth day. So it got tied up into the creationism versus evolution debate. In Idaho, a student wanted to name the giant salamander as the official, an amphibian, I guess. Yeah, the official amphibian. But lawmakers were worried about that would lead to protections for the giant salamander, which would thwart things like development.
Oh, and sure, environmental protections.
And
you can't build there.
Species stuff. Exactly. So we're certainly not alone. And as a matter of fact, one state, Missouri, this year, sort of ironically, has a bill to limit the number of state symbols to 28. So it's recognized in other legislatures that maybe there are too many of these. I should back up too. This year alone, there were at one point more than 70 pieces of legislation nationwide to name everything from the official Alaska state hostess, who would of course be Miss Alaska, and in Wyoming. There was an effort to name the official legendary creature the jackalope.
I've seen those on postcards.
Yes. The cross between the jackrabbit and the antelope.
Right. Never seen one in person, but yeah.
No. nor will you.
So, Rick, just to finish up with you, and you wrote a great piece looking around the country at these efforts, and it's not just New Hampshire. And as you said, it's not just New Hampshire where it gets politicized. Who's the leader when it comes to state symbols? You know, who's got everything? The state cup, the state bug, the state, you know, I don't know, whatever, type of dirt.
Well, it's changing. Well, Harney silt loam, by the way, is the official soil of Kansas. I'm a little embarrassed that I know that off the top of my head. A lot of states have scores of symbols. Oklahoma has 45. They have five separate foods, including the state bean.
Bean?
The state bean, it's black-eyed pea is the official state bean in Oklahoma. So, there are states that have literally scores of these symbols. New Hampshire is actually fairly tame. We have, probably a dozen or so. We have the tree and the dog and the saltwater fish and the freshwater fish. So plenty of honors out there.
All right. Well, Rick, thank you very much for taking time out for us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
That's Rick Stevens, again, Northern New England correspondent for the Associated Press, who took a look at the idea of state symbols, both here in New Hampshire and around the country. And he tapped into the broader conversation that we're going to tap into now, how to get kids engaged in government and civics, whether encouraging them to introduce these kinds of bills is a good idea or not. We'd love to hear from you on that topic, 1-800-892-6477. Join us, 1-800-892-NHPR. What do you think about kids coming to the legislature, asking lawmakers to designate an official state dog, fruit, beetle, whatever it may be? Is that a good way to engage them in the process of politics and government, or are there better ways? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. With us for the rest of the hour are two civics educators. Dave Alcox is with us, social studies teacher at Milford High School. He teaches the We the People class for juniors and seniors. And Dave Alcox, great to have you. Thanks for your time.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm honored to be part of New Hampshire Public Radio.
And also with us, Andrea Cameron. She's a fourth grade classroom teacher at Canterbury Elementary School. And Andrea, good to have you too. Thanks for taking time out of school today for us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Andrea, for you first, because this was fourth graders, and some people may not know, but fourth grade is the year that kids learn about New Hampshire government. A lot of them also learn about birds of prey that year, so it's kind of the perfect year for these kids to introduce this bill. What's the takeaway for you, Andrea, as a fourth grade educator, from all this red-tailed hawk controversy?
I can understand both sides of the story. I think it's great that fourth graders are getting excited about government and how it works and finding a developmentally appropriate way for them to participate. But I understand, the government has a lot of things that they do need to focus on, and the number of state symbols we can have is, unending. You can find a symbol for everything.
Well, what are you saying to your own fourth graders about this, Andrea?
I'm asking them what they think.
Yeah. What do they say?
They haven't really come up with an idea yet. They love the idea of symbols. They love researching symbols. We start the year looking at New Hampshire and its state symbols. That's how we begin our look at social studies. So they're excited about that. But they're now starting to learn about government. So the process of how a bill becomes a law and how these things come to be is new to them. So it'll be interesting what they end up thinking at the end.
Dave Alcox, what's the takeaway for you and your high school kids?
Well, at the high school level, and I totally understand what Andrea is saying at the elementary school level, I think there are definitely two different outcomes that you're looking for. And what I look for is, at the end of the day, what do I want my kids to come away with? So in my belief, I try to engage them, do more pragmatism, you know, more hands-on. I give great thanks to Rick earlier, who you were speaking with, about identifying all the different things that I try to do with my students. And I think the idea is to show them, you know, the reality of government, that government is real and accessible. I mean, we're in a state with 400 state legislators, one for every, like, 3,400 people. So we have great accessibility to our government, you know, having Governor Maggie Hassan come in, having Senator Kelly Ayotte come in. You know, the kids have a unique experience in New Hampshire that they may not have in other states. So what I try to do is say, at the end of the day, what do I want them to know or learn? And to me, just being a participatory citizen is the most effective way that I can help promote civic education.
So what's your response then, Dave, to lawmakers, some of who have been quite vocal about this, that, you know, they're tired of these bills. They're busy. There was one passionate editorial by one Democratic lawmaker just the other day saying, look, you know, this is a budget year. We're all under a lot of pressure. This is a waste of time. How do you feel about that, Dave?
Well, no question. I definitely think there needs to be a balance. You obviously, I don't think any state legislator in the state wants to say no to, you know, a 10-year-old kid. So it does put them in a precarious position, especially when usually your state representatives are your neighbors. I mean, you definitely know somebody. But you also have to weigh the budget just passed yesterday at the State House, and obviously we're in for a long haul. It looks like it's going to be a battle. Can the legislators use their time, you know, more effectively? Well, absolutely. So it does make the teacher have to start to pick and choose and say, again, like I said earlier, what do I want them to come away with? If they want to learn how a bill is passed, is it more appropriate to maybe do an in-school simulation and maybe have a state representative come in and talk to the kids and have a more personalized approach that way? Or is it necessary to tie up, you know, the other 399 legislators, you know, to try to put a point across to a classroom? That I think is the juxtaposition of the issue. You know, how do you balance that? Should you maybe have a committee that, you know, picks and chooses a certain amount of bills like that? I don't know if that's effective either. I just think a lot of it is being wary of how much involvement in what you're detracting from, you know, the people who are actually, you know, trying to do their jobs as well.
Andrea, what do you think? A waste of time?
No, I absolutely agree with what Dave was saying. I like the idea of a school simulation and having people come in. We take a field trip to the State House every year. We go to the Supreme Court so that they can meet these people. We've had our representatives in, and like you said, they're their neighbors. They're their grandparents sometimes. So they do get to know them well. But, you know, limiting and really picking. I would also really be, you know, willing to work with my students and older students and representatives for bills that really are meaningful and impact the students' lives, because at the end of the day, it is about teaching them the rights and duties of being a citizen and how government works.
Let's take some calls, both of you. I've got a couple emails I want to share with you. And also, we invite you to join us with your questions and comments. We're talking about engaging kids from fourth grade up to high school in civics and government. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Andrea and Dave, let's go to our callers. Jim's in Goffstown. Hi, Jim. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
It seems pretty simple that you could just make a mechanism to allow for a certain number of these bills every year, have the schools apply for them, and have them expire at the end of the year. Create rules that say you can't send these things through a variety of committees. You can't make amendments, what have you. But then you get a very streamlined, easy process. You limit it to a certain number, and the kids get the learning experience.
Well, that's an interesting idea, Jim. Thank you for calling in. Andrea, I'll turn to you again because fourth grade is kind of the year. What about that? I actually like that idea of, okay, maybe that's a good compromise. Allow for a certain number of these bills from fourth graders. And that's a competitive process. That's a learning experience right there.
Absolutely. I agree. I'm all for balance.
Thanks, Jim, for that call. Go ahead, Andrew. Do you want to add something else
to
that?
Nope, just all for balance.
Well, and a couple emails here, too. Hillary in Meriden says, I agree with John Oliver. Vote yes. What's the big deal? Hillary says, I believe these state legislators need to grow up. What about that, Dave Alcox? You know, just their kids, you know, just vote yes.
They're kids today, but they're grown-ups tomorrow. No, the gentleman from Goffstown does make a valid point about, you know, could you put a certain amount there? But then, I think part of it, especially with no amendments and so on and streamlining, are you learning the lesson of compromise? I mean, obviously, when I try to teach how bills, go through the legislative process, it very rarely would you ever see a streamlined bill. You know, I mean, it's almost like the sausage analogy. You eat it, but you don't want to know what goes into it, right? But you like the end product. There's so much that goes back and forth. I mean, just look at yesterday. I mean, the Senate now is going to look at the New Hampshire state budget, and they're obviously going to be in for a real battle, and it's going to go back and forth a little bit. So the kids need to recognize, you know, that the legislative process of actually forming a bill is based on compromise. And if you just kind of said, well, let's just mainstream a few bills and, you know, the kids will get their chance and they'll see a bill go through, then that's not the lesson that I want the kid to take away with at the end of the day, because that's not the reality of it. That's just like, let's try to kind of cater towards kids and it's a cute idea and let's put a bill through. But that's not a learning moment by any means.
Because it's not real. It's not how it really
works. Exactly. It's not real. It's just like, okay, we're putting a bill forward and nobody better say no, because then they're going to look like grumpy old men. I don't know. I mean, obviously we do that at the federal level too, I hope. So it makes it a little bit difficult because there is no easy solution. And I agree with Andrea, you know, like you want to show compromise and you want to show, you know, you do have grandparents that are probably state legislators as well. And, you know, you want to try to make this a learning moment, you know, for everybody. So I don't know. I'm not a fan of just streamlining. I do like the competitive process, like you were saying. Make it a competitive process. Maybe if you entertained a few bills
and
that maybe
worked. Dave, hold on one moment there. Sorry to interrupt you. We're going to go to a short break, but stay with us. More emails and phone calls in just a minute. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about teaching kids in New Hampshire about civics and government. This conversation sprung from a recent bill proposed by fourth graders from Hampton Falls. It was debated and defeated in the legislature. Some of the comments that lawmakers made during the debate were upsetting to some of the kids and their parents, but it did open up this wider conversation about what is the best way to engage students in learning about civics and government. That's what we're talking about this hour. We have two civics educators with us, Andrea Cameron, fourth grade classroom teacher at Canterbury Elementary School, and Dave Alcox, social studies teacher at Milford High School. He teaches the We the People class for juniors and seniors. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Andrea and Dave, a couple emails have come in. Here's Mary in Hancock. She says, seeing legislators act the way they did about the Hawk proposal was a good civics lesson, Mary says. It helped them understand how disorderly legislative sessions can be. That's the sausage comment that you made earlier, Dave. Here's another one from Brian in Jackson. He says, perhaps having kids propose legislation is more about teaching the legislators basic manners than teaching the kids civics. Seems to me we have forgotten the basics of civics, that is to remain civil while dealing with those who may disagree with us. So those are two comments from Brian and Mary. Thank you for those emails. Andrew, do you want to comment on Brian's point? You know, civics is partly about being civil.
Definitely. And here in Canterbury, we call it a responsive classroom school, and that really focuses on, you know, developing tolerance and respect and appreciation. So I couldn't agree more. I think it was a great lesson.
And what about Mary's comment, though, to Andrea, and Dave's comment, too, that, you know, lawmaking isn't pretty. And as Marian Hancock says, seeing the way lawmakers acted was in and of itself a civics lesson. Sometimes not just your stuff gets defeated, which the kids were prepared for in this instance, but that it can get, well, not friendly.
It absolutely, and you know, and trying to impress that upon a fourth grader that government is messy. It's not a clear cut, you know, yes, no, and we do make mistakes, and lawmakers can make mistakes in how they speak in the heat of the moment, and trying to get them to accept the tolerance, and you don't always have to agree with someone, but what I try to teach my students is what you say needs to be kind, true, and necessary.
Let's take another call. This is Jody in Freedom. Hi, Jody, you're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, yes, I'm the director of the YMCA Youth and Government Program, which actually takes over the 250 students, take over the House and the Senate, and have a mock legislature that we write bills and actually get a hands-on experience at the State House. So I just wanted to put that out there that the YMCA has an outstanding program that does exactly what we're talking about in the sense of giving students the opportunity to write bills and then debate them and experience the opportunity of having the...
And your phone's crackling out a little bit, Jody, so I'll let you go. Yeah, so a mock legislative session. They did this in one of my kids' fourth grade classes where they had to run for state rep or run for state senate, and of course there was a big race for governor, and then once everybody was elected, they picked a couple issues and they, you know, had sort of a mock session right there in the school. Go ahead, Dave.
I absolutely agree with her. There are so many programs that are available. Obviously, We the People is run by the Center for Civic Education, but it's administered in our state by the New Hampshire Bar Association. And Robin Nippers at the New Hampshire Bar Association does a wonderful job of supplying a number of different opportunities. You know, there's the We the People program, there's a lawyer in every classroom. But as the caller just alluded to, there's also the Youth in Government program, there's Model Congress, there's Mock Trial. There are a number of extra, you know, civic education programs that are available at the high school levels and at the middle school levels that really give the kids opportunity to be exposed to these programs and the concept of civic education that I feel like our state is very lucky to have a number of these. In terms of civility, I absolutely agree with Andrea that, you know, we do want to try to show more civility, and you're seeing that at the State House. Governor Hassan was with the kids a couple weeks ago, and one of the things she commented on was how she has to work with the people because she was, you know, at one point she was a state senator and she was sharing cough drops and Tums with the people who were senators next to her who are now, you know, obviously in more positions, you know, more positions in the state. There needs to be that level of civility, and I really wish that maybe that would resonate with the legislators. I agree that the comments that the legislators made were a little crass and maybe taken, you know, a step further than they should have been. I agree that, maybe the civility, a civility lesson can be learned from this.
All right, let's take another call. This is Judith in Bedford. Hi, Judith, go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Good morning.
Morning.
For 17 years, I taught social studies in the state of New Jersey. And the New Jersey legislature and the State House had a program that teachers could sign up for where it included an excellent in-depth tour of the State House followed by a session where the students all had assigned roles and they debated and passed or didn't pass a bill that got their interest. The last one I participated in was would bike helmets be mandatory?
Yeah.
And it was done very formally, and the students really came a lot way with a lot of information about how the process works because they were right there voting, being in charge, being the bailiff, handing out the papers.
Wow. And although it was all mock, Judith, right? They didn't.
It was all mock, but it was held in the State House building.
Sure.
in New Jersey.
Okay.
And it was followed up with the tour and the chance, of course, to see the actual floor and then to go down and do this work. And it would save some of the embarrassment of not knowing exactly what was going to happen.
Well, Judith, thanks a lot for calling in. And Andrea, so this is beyond the usual, you know, tour. Here's where they vote and here's where the governor sits and so forth. What do you think?
Sounds like a great program, although I do have to throw huge kudos out to, I think her name's Virginia, down at the New Hampshire State House for organizing the tours for fourth grade. she and her crew do a fabulous job down there.
What other ways do you try to get kids engaged with civics, Andrea? Again, you're a fourth grade classroom teacher, so you've got a lot of balls in the air, not just civics and social studies. But what are some of the ways that you try to get them a little more engaged than just, you know, here's how many lawmakers there are, you know, here's when the legislature meets and so forth?
Right. We try to bring it down to, you know, their level and what's going on right here in their own community and making changes that way, making sure they're participating whenever they can in, you know, we have peer mediation here. We have a student council here. So encouraging them in those ways right here in this community and then expanding their view to the New Hampshire community and then even to the national community as they move on up through the school.
So super-duper local student government
super-duper
right
local,
there.
Yep, meaningful, you know, to them.
And in Canterbury, you've got town meetings. So, I mean, is that part of your civics education?
Yeah, we try to encourage them. This year I had a number of former students, so they were fifth graders, last year's fourth graders, that attended our school district meeting, which was very interesting for them to be there.
Let's take another call, both of you. Mike's calling in from Lebanon. Go ahead, Mike. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. I used to do newspapers and education. I spent about 20 years doing that, and that is civic engagement. And what we would get, I've also been a newspaper editor, and once in a while you'd get a letter from a kid about, you know, an endangered species, and you think that's nice, and you want to run it. And the next day you get three letters from the same neighborhood from kids. And the next day you'd have six, and you found out that some teacher had simply assigned them to write letters. And they didn't care about the stuff. They were fulfilling an assignment. What I would rather see is when the kids have been actually keeping up with current events and they get fired up about something, then I want to hear from them. And I think that works also within the legislature, that if, for instance, they're following current events and they see the cuts in Meals on Wheels that came through in the budget, and maybe they've got grandparents who are on Meals on Wheels, or they know people in their neighborhood, and they're really upset, then I want to hear from them.
So have them engage on real, meaningful issues beyond sort
that
of the state
bill. That they care about.
Yeah.
And it might be 3 or 4 years between the time when that year's class actually fires up. But you can't say, okay, kids, today we're going to care.
Interesting.
You've got to engage them constantly. I also want to add that all the simulation programs are fabulous, and they're very much underutilized. Teachers don't know they're out there. You need to look around for this stuff and use it, because there are people who are working so hard to provide those services, and they feel like they're up against a stone wall because, you know, nobody does standardized testing on whether or not you did this simulation.
Okay, Mike.
But they're
thank
out
you.
There.
Yeah, thank you for calling in, and you'll be happy to hear, Mike, that Sabrina in Nashua actually has a very similar comment to yours. She says, "I think it would be beneficial to select actual bills in the process and teach children regarding the ramifications of them." Sabrina says, "A budget year is a difficult year, and it is a great year for children to learn what government really does." She says, "We are underestimating their ability to comprehend the right and wrong of how tax dollars should be spent." Sabrina says, "Why not have them review bills and write opinion letters to the legislature? I think it would be very enlightening for legislators to hear the opinions of children regarding the recent cuts to social services to the elderly and disabled, for example." So thanks for that call, Mike. Sabrina, thanks for the email. What do you think about this, Dave Alcox? Never mind these, you know, state this or that. Have kids engage on real issues.
I absolutely agree with Mike 100%. And in fact, one of the Center of Civic Education's programs is called Project Citizen, and it's for middle schoolers. And it's arguably one of the most amazing real-life programs that I can think of that a kid could ever want to do. And again, it's available at the New Hampshire Bar Association with Robin Nippers. But what this program does is it asks the kids in the community to take an issue in the community and to focus on it and to try to change a wrong. And they research the issue, they write up, you know, information, they go to their local alderman, or in Milford we would go to our board of selectmen, and you present and you say, look, this is a problem in our community, this is one of the solutions that we would like to do, and we would like to fix this. And all over the country, Project Citizen has been responsible for a number of improvements within the local community. And that's a real program, not a simulated program. So I would absolutely encourage, you know, middle school teachers to take advantage of that. I agree with Mike. There's a ton of programs out there. You just have to go scrape around a little bit.
You know, so they go, in that instance that you mentioned, Dave, they go to the Board of Selectmen and they testify.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's not a congressional simulated type of hearing or anything. They literally go with information. They said, we've done the research. I know in Rhode Island, a friend of mine who their program won the state competition, they did a whole thing on water recycling, and they saved their town hundreds of thousands of dollars because they were able to come up with a solution. And this was real, and this is what Project Citizen will do, and it teaches them civic engagement and classical republicanism philosophies of small uniform communities and how to be an engaged citizen within your community.
So that's at the local level. What about before the legislature, Dave? I mean, is it appropriate ever for kids to research an issue and testify before the legislature on an issue of consequence, beyond a state symbol?
Well, yeah. I don't know the specifics, but I just read in the Nashua Telegraph the other day about a student from Sohegan High who was up at the state legislature testifying about bullying. And, I think when there's real issues in our state and, the communities of our state, our state legislature is extremely accessible for real and germane issues. We do have opportunity. We have the best state in the nation, I believe, in terms of having our kids and our adults get their voice heard.
Here's an email that came in from Angie. She says, years ago, a group of fourth grade students from Holderness Central School introduced a bill to create a license plate that would benefit the environment via conservation. Angie says it took several years, but now many of us pay a little extra cash each year to have a moose on our license plate. She says not all bills are frivolous. So there you go, Andrea. There's a bill that actually helped raise a little cash. What do you think?
I think it's a great idea, and I think that Mike was absolutely right. We need to get them fired up, but it absolutely has to be meaningful to them.
What about his? Oh, go ahead. Did you want to add something else in here?
No, that's it.
What about his point that this is our caller, Mike, who says, "Look, this civics education is available. It's there. It's rich. It's meaningful. But teachers need to spend some time digging this stuff out." What do you think of that? And then I have another question for you, Andrea.
He's probably absolutely right. There are lots of things out there that teachers don't necessarily know about, and I think he touches upon an important sort of third rail for me is the whole idea of time, finding the time to find these things.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about. Yeah, go ahead. Do you have time to find them out? Do you have time to take your kids out of school for a day and bring them to the State House to do this?
Well, we find the time for the important things, so we do take them to the State House. I also bring them over to the Supreme Court in Canterbury. We're incredibly lucky. We actually have one of the Supreme Court justices of New Hampshire that's a Canterbury resident. So,
and what do they get out of those visits beyond sort of, cool, it's a field trip, we don't have to do our math test today?
They are impressed by the State House when they go. They really are. The Hall of Flags usually really captures them, just seeing the rich history of New Hampshire and the Supreme Court, knowing what goes on in that building. They're amazed by that. They're really in a place where government does happen.
Dave, following up on our caller's comment on standardized tests, there's been some complaining that the standardized testing of recent years has not focused on civics and government and social studies and just sort of the way our democracy works. Are you seeing a change in that, or does that continue to be a problem from your biased opinion as a social studies teacher?
Well, I think the biggest change you see is currently right now there's a bill introduced at our state legislature, SB 157, and what this is this is requiring students to pass a U.S. citizenship test to graduate high school, such as what Arizona did. I think We don't have a civics test as part of our kneecap testing or social studies and so on. But what we are doing is we are starting to see it in the legislature. But the Senate has already passed the bill. It's at the House now, and the House is going to debate it. I think that we do want our kids to be more civically orientated. If I may, as a last, as a comment that I would hope that would resonate with the rest of the state, I always try to tell my students, they're going to graduate high school someday and they're going to retire from their job someday. But the one thing that they never, ever leave is their citizenship, and they'll be citizens for life. So we should, you know what our rights and responsibilities are in our community and in our state, so we can all be a better citizen and have a, obviously a better community.
All right. Dave, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate your time. We know you're in the middle of school there, so thank you.
My students love it. Shout out to Milford High Spartans.
Thanks a lot
for having me.
Bye-bye. That's Dave Alcock, social studies teacher at Milford High School. He teaches the We the People class for juniors and seniors. Andrea Cameron, we'll let you get back to your kids as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Andrea Cameron, fourth grade classroom teacher at Canterbury Elementary School. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Faith Meixel and Jason Moon. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.